If there was a rookie of the year for writers, MVP for writers, Ian McIntyre would have a trophy shelf full of them. Deserve it, award-winning journalist joins us now. iMac, how are you?
Those awards aren't worth what they used to be, I have a feeling. For the journalist ones, the hockey ones are still great. Paul Kariya and Scott Niedermeyer finish?
That's a good question.
Yeah, well,
did Kariya not win? I guess he didn't.
No, I don't think he did. Well, you know, we've had some gremlins here. We'll give you that answer. No, but I don't think he had. We looked it up before because I thought Joe Sakic might be the one, but hadn't had it. Kariya would have had a good rookie year, too. It's surprising that we haven't had someone from Vancouver that has won the award. Matt Barzal, were you on that Islander trip? What do you make of his ability? It's just the pure skating, isn't it, that lends into all this?
Yeah, just a fabulous skater. I thought it was really interesting this morning, actually listening to them talk about each other, but also listening to Doug Waite talk about them, and Waite said, and it's not, you know, politically correct probably because he's Barzal's coach, but he said he's more surprised by Barzal than he is by Besser, because you know, he tracked Besser and he didn't elaborate why, but it was part of his duties when he was an assistant coach, and he said he always figured that Besser's game would translate to the NHL, but he said Barzal has really impressed after having to go back to Seattle last year for another year in junior, the way became a better player there, and now as we know, not only made the Islanders, but is helping drive their attack, and that's especially impressive when you consider their attack includes one of the superstars in the game, in John Tavares.
Well, and something that the play-by-play guy Chris King was telling us from Long Island is Tavares is such a business guy, a nice guy, but so focused on everything. And Barzal is the 20-year-old Instagram Twitter that maybe helps the situation, too, in an age where personality can help market share and get more interest in the team. Was he a comfortable young kid, or did he look like a nervous 20-year-old in front of everybody this morning?
No, he was great, and he was patient. He answered a lot of questions. You can tell he's still a very young guy, but he answered a lot of questions and a lot of the same ones about Besser, and I think he could tell that the reporters so badly wanted to make some connection between the two, and there really isn't. I mean, they had a couple of conversations at the 2015 combine, and that's it. They're not text buddies, they're not Facebook friends. So, but he handled himself very well, and it's always interesting because we work in this market every day, and I wonder how he would be if he had to handle the crush of reporters that he had to deal with today. On the other hand, not playing in an easy market. He's in New York. He's in, you know, Brooklyn, not Manhattan, but that's still not an easy place to play, and there is a lot of scrutiny. It's just nice that there's a game in early March that people here are excited about, considering where the Canucks are in the standings, and really the Islanders are going to have a very hard time getting in now as well. But it's nice that there's a game that people are excited about and looking forward to, like this one.
Ian, I do have some answers for your questions there. 1991, the year that Scott Niedermeyer entered the league, Pavel Bure won that year, 91-92. And in 94-95, which was Korea's rookie year, some guy named Peter Forsberg won that year. So, both of them were shut out there.
There you go. And I know Scott Niedermeyer's not a Vancouver guy, but he's a BC guy.
So BC guy.
That was close. It is amazing, though, I guess in the last 20 years that there hasn't been somebody from BC. But even more amazing than that is the impact that BC hockey players have made on the NHL in the last 20 years versus the 80 years prior, because there's more players now that come out of BC than ever before and are high-end guys, you know, top five draft picks. And it's hard to believe that even if you go back to the 1980s, you could almost count on one hand. Maybe not guys in BC from the league on one hand, but certainly guys who were impact players and very high draft picks. because there was, you know, Ryan Walter and there was Barry Beck before him and there was Cam Neely after him. But honestly, there were not that many BC players. And starting in the early 90s, and Niedermeyer was part of that group, Correa, Sakic, Rod Brind'Amour, Mark Recchi, those five guys in particular, they elevated BC hockey. If you add the numbers for their careers, it's absolutely staggering what those guys accomplished. And to me, it's made it easier for the Andrew Ladds and Kyle Turris's and now the Matthew Barzells to follow. And it is quite an accomplishment for BC hockey, what's happened in the last quarter century.
You're absolutely right, Ian. It's a bit of a golden age for BC hockey. Looking at the Canucks right now, Sven Berchi shut down for the year, it looks like. And when you look at this year for Sven Berchi, what's your assessment of it? What takeaways are there for Sven Berchi's season this year?
Well, I'm not sure he's any farther ahead now than he was at the end of last year. And so in that respect, it's disappointing because this is a player they want to be part of their core group. Now, in saying core group, I'm not saying one of their top three or four guys, but they want him to be a regular part of their attack for years to come. And through a little bit of injury and a little bit of inconsistency, he just wasn't able to progress this year. You know, he wasn't able to take another step. I still like Sven Berchi a lot, but, you know, he's going to be coming to training camp next year, and there'll be the same questions that there were this year, in that, is there more to his game? Does he have a higher offensive ceiling? Is he really going to be a top six forward in this league? So it's really too bad for him, because he was playing better lately. You know, the healthy scratch a couple of weeks ago was a big talking point. I think he'd played with more urgency and energy in his game since then. But it's really unfortunate for him to have the rib injury that's taking him out, because it's almost like a lost season for him now. Maybe in that respect, he mirrors the Canucks. Maybe it's a lost season for them. But certainly for Sven Berchi, he's going to have to show everyone again next fall.
Does Goldobin have the most to prove here, the most to gain and the most to lose as we finish out this season?
No, it's UC Jokinen.
It is, eh?
I'm giving you a hard time, Perry. Say last week,
yeah,
if UC Okunin's playing, you're telling people not to go to the game.
Yeah, but Matt Barzell's there today.
Yeah,
go watch Barzell, Matt Barzell. No one is going to watch UC Okunin. His parents may be streaming it somewhere.
I know that, but people will still enjoy the game. I think there's a lot of guys with things to prove, and Goldobin maybe more so among the young players, because it seems his hold on a spot is so tenuous. And you have to keep in mind as well right now, they have four forwards out of their lineup indefinitely, if you're including Granlund, Eriksson, Berchi, who are all done for the year, and Brendan Gaunce, that we know Travis Green really likes, he's injured. Derek Dorsett, who is another staple of the top nine, retired. These should be favorable circumstances for Nikolai Goldobin to show something. And the circumstances for him are not getting better next year, because now you've got Pettersson and Gaudette and maybe Cole Lind on the landscape. Plus you've got these injured guys back, and you can say what you want. We all know that Eriksson has been a huge disappointment, and that contract's a bit of an albatross, but he's going to be on the team somewhere, right? He's going to be in the bottom six. So is Marcus Granlund going to be on the team? So if Goldobin doesn't take his opportunity now in these last, 15 games they've got, I don't see him making some grand run next October and September to make this team. I think he has to show something before this season is over.
Well, the new guys are making some noise as well. Brendan Leipzig, we know in the first game, had a couple assists and played quite well. Tyler Motte is a guy that you don't maybe notice as much, but he has brought a little bit of, I guess, energy and a little bit of effort on that bottom six. What is your takeaway when it comes to Tyler Motte? Do you think this guy is when you look at that bottom six going forward next year, is he a part of it for you?
I think it's too early to tell, but I think he would have trouble being in the bottom six when this team is healthy. And then on top of that, you factor in the guys who might be coming in above him, which theoretically would push other guys farther down the lineup. So that competition, that's the great thing about Pettersson and Gaudette. It's not just the competition at the top and for power play and stuff that they're going to impact. They're going to impact the competition at the bottom, because there will be guys playing for the bottom six who right now maybe think they're playing in the top six. I like that Tyler Motte has speed. I like that he seems to want to get involved. But he's a 5'9" player who has yet to show that he can be a regular in the NHL. Now, he's going to benefit in these last 4 weeks, the same way Goldobin does, the same way all these young guys do, that he has the stage. And that's his advantage over other people who will be coming into the organization or back from injury, is they're not here right now. He is. So now he's got to show something. Leipzig, I like a lot. His first game was fantastic. Second game, I didn't notice him as much, but clearly he's a guy who gets around the ice in a hurry, has terrific instincts and ability when he's got the puck. So then it's a matter of, well, how is he playing without the puck? What else can he do if he's not scoring? Leipzig, I like to be on the team next year. I think it's going to be harder for Motte, though.
Gar Snow is a good quote when he was a player here. Are you surprised he's got the tenure that he's had in Long Island?
No, because the longer I cover the National Hockey League, the more I realize a lot of the relation, or I realize how important the relationship is between a GM and an owner in terms of that GM's longevity. And if you look around, there's lots of teams that you could say should have or could have changed their GM sooner. And in many cases, and I won't bore you with the list now, but you can go through it. It's not hard. In many cases, it's because the ownership had such a strong relationship or belief in the GM. And clearly, Gar Snow still has the belief of ownership on Long Island, and in that he's the guy to do this job. But certainly by a lot of measures, if you looked at simple wins, losses, playoff appearances, playoff performance when they have been in, I'm not sure he would have survived in, say, a market in Canada, and certainly wouldn't have survived in Vancouver.
Well, one of the talking points across the NHL now is that kind of what we were talking about Sven Berchi earlier. A lot of players are being shut down. We know Max Pacioretty, Victor Mete out in Montreal. I know everybody's banged up at this point of the year, but our teams, you know, there's that tanking conversation. If you're out of it,
yeah.
Is this being done on purpose because they want to get more lottery balls? Do you think there's an element of that in today's NHL, even though tanking is frowned upon? But is this not a form of tanking?
I think it is, but I think it's only as a byproduct. I think the fact is there's no reason to take any kind of chance with a veteran player, especially a guy who's going to be on your team next year. And so the teams are ultra cautious. The fact that it does impact the team's strength and therefore where they might finish in the draft lottery, yeah, that's kind of a nice little side effect. But I don't think the Canucks, when they're shutting down players, are thinking, well, this is going to make us worse so we can get a better draft position. And we all know as well now, or we should know, when people talk about finish, it's irrelevant until you have the draft lottery, and we've seen how it's screwed the Canucks the last couple of years. It's hurt a lot of teams that it's supposed to help. The best example is Colorado Avalanche last year, having the worst record I think since the 1990s of any team in the NHL. Instead of drafting first, they draft fourth. So you can finish, yeah, you lose the games you want to lose, finish 29th, finish 28th, finish 30th, but it doesn't mean anything until you have the draft lottery. All it means is that your odds in winning or losing the draft lottery are slightly better, and that there's no disputing that. Mathematically, yeah, it helps if you finish 30th rather than 28th. But the reality is with the draft lottery, chances are you're moving back anyways, and teams less deserving than you are going to pick ahead of you. and that's where the NHL is.
Hi, Mac. You're always a number one pick as far as we're concerned. Thank you for your time.
Or at least a fourth rounder.
I beat the odds.
I beat the odds.
You made it to the big leagues.
Percenters who played.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Fair enough. Enjoy the game tonight. Thank you for this. Appreciate it.
Sportsnet 650.